Hey guys, welcome to episode 205 of the podcast. It's Boys of Summer. I bet you know that. I hope you love it as much as I do. I want to welcome you into this episode with my buddy Chris Tallman. I think you're really going to enjoy it. And it is kind of a fun coincidence in terms of Chris and Mark McConville being positioned near each other because of their slightly similar background. I was tickled by it. I adore them both. And I hope everybody's doing well this summer. It's going to be interesting this summer, moving through the Boys of Summer, because of course I'm here in Atlanta for almost the whole summer. So if anybody knows anybody who's here in Atlanta, listen, I know that's a very specific reach, and I have a couple of people hopefully lined up. I'm sure some of you will suggest the people that I have lined up. And I'm not sure, some of the shows that shoot here aren't shooting right now. So I'm getting a little creative. I'm going to try to get some people who have recording gear of their own, either in LA or New York, and do some over the phones. But yeah, I'm always looking for your recommendations. And to that end, I want to thank Josh and Jessica and Jenna for all of yours. Todd and Claire, thanks for your Facebook posts. And for on email, I want to thank Harry and Jay and Cass. And I want to congratulate Claire on her wedding. Congratulations. And I hope you guys have a great next week. And I will talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yes.
Sibilance.
Yes. Now, Sibilance was a multi-personality character played by Sally Field.
Yep. Oh, great show.
Was it a musical? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. And every character had their own little song.
Yeah.
And then when they all sing together.
Oh, what a joy.
It's great. Well, because then everybody in the chorus gets to play one of the many characters of Sibilance.
That's wonderful. But to be clear, it is a one-person show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, then you get with no lip syncing. Or double.
How? Why would you? It's a live.
Right.
It's a live theater program.
You're right.
No,
God,
it's,
so
this is no Hamilton. This is Hamilton before it was Hamilton.
My eyes are darting around feverishly as I try to figure out how this is all going to come together.
It'll be fine.
The Sibilance show.
It'll be fine.
But that was a big deal, Sibyl, when it, I feel like that was somehow, it's a kid, so I don't really remember, but I remember.
I remember that it was a thing. I feel like more
it was like a reference. People just constantly made it a reference to it.
I feel like I remember Norma Rae as a prominent Sally Field thing from my childhood more than Sibyl.
God, I don't remember. I'm trying to remember what I would have associated Sally Field from. For me, it was this movie called Murphy's Romance.
Sure.
You know Murphy's Romance?
Of course. It ran
so
on
many people.
HBO all the time.
So many people have no idea what it is.
Really?
I think it's like I think unless you had HBO and watched it, my dad showed it to me, so I don't even think we had HBO, but it's like a thing I'll just sort of toss off with the assumption that someone will know what it is. And they're like, I don't know what that is. And I'm like, oh, it's great.
Janet, stop making up movies. Yeah. I remember it because isn't it like, is she like in like a red shirt and like the poster? She's kind of like leaning on Burt Reynolds. Like I kind of feel
it's not Burt Reynolds.
It's Garner?
Yeah.
It's Garner. That's what it is. But I feel like I see her like big movie poster smile.
Probably.
Leaning. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probably true.
It's not. I feel like it's maybe 1980.
Maybe.
Is it maybe it had a hard time because if it is Garner.
It's a very quiet movie.
Yeah. But it's her post Burt Reynolds, and we all loved her and him together so much.
But that was such a first of all, I agree with you. I don't know when it came out. That could be, but it might have been later than that. I didn't see it when it was like new. My dad was just like, "Oh, by the way, here's this wonderful movie I love," and rented it for me.
A quiet.
It's just
haunting.
A slow, small town. You know, the divorced mom with her son Corey Haim.
Aww.
move. So it must be like mid-80s, right? Because if he was my age, then he wouldn't have been able to.
Well, I'm trying to think like Lost Boys, sort of like the peak of the Corys. Yeah, that's like
it was 86, around. Yeah, so it was probably a little bit before that. But
is he still kind of a little kid? Or is
he's
he
not
teen?
That little. He's like early teen.
Oh,
I think
okay.
It's probably right before Lost Boys.
All
right. I don't know. I do all of my movie measuring by how old Corey Haim was, whether or not he was in it.
Oh, wow.
And then I had to stop that system.
Why? Why would you stop?
Because he passed away.
Oh, Janet.
It's hard to say passed away when someone has sort of a violent, abrupt OD death.
What do you want to say?
Passed away sounds like it's very gentle and it happens to the
like
elderly.
Like in his sleep or something?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what would you rather say?
He OD'd.
What about a positive spin on it?
He flamed out.
He OD'd! All
right. Sure. He flamed out. That's good too.
That's sort of thing.
That's so, really good too.
You know, make it fun.
Sure.
You know what I mean? He's sitting here with us. He's
burned
like,
bright.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. He was the candle that burned.
He was the candle in the wind. Mm. Oh. Now we've turned him into Lady Diana and
it,
Marilyn
Monroe.
Got
real
Monroe.
Murphy's Romance in here. All
of a sudden. Oh, Murphy's Romance. Listen, let's get back to that immediately.
All right.
My Murphy's Romance podcast.
I love Garner.
He is, and so it is. Listen, it's an older man, younger woman romance. Mm-hmm. No one's saying that's new.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a little obnoxious now if it was made. You'd be like, ugh, another one. But they make fun of that. Like, she constantly is teasing him for being an old man.
Oh,
kind
I like
of thing.
That.
And it does not start out that way. And it's sort of like these two semi-broken people mm-hmm. kind of finding each other. So it's in the it doesn't feel as much like it's like, listen, this guy in his Corvette picks up this 30-year-old and doodle-a-doo. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's more of, it's very gentle. It's very wry. It's very James Garner pace. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
just very wry. Everything's like under-delivered.
Well, because that's probably, is that during a Rockford File? That's got to be, if it's not.
I don't know.
It might be right
that's
after.
That's a good question.
That's peak.
Yeah.
Garner time.
And they remade Rockford Files for a hot second. Didn't they make a pilot of it with Dermot
Mulroney?
They
tried it once, I think, and then it didn't go, and then they tried it again. Yeah, Dermot Mulroney and I'm blanking on his name, the awesome character actor who I'm sure you've worked with. He's a Thrilling Adventure Hour guy. He does a bunch of the Disney voices now. He's the pilot Wash from Firefly. Alan Tudyk.
Oh, Alan Tudyk. Oh, Alan Tudyk was Maverick for a second? Or no, he was in the same pilot
with. He was the lieutenant.
With...
He
got
was
it.
The cop. He
got
was
it,
sort
it,
of
it.
The, like the, hey, Maverick, we got to figure yeah. out what happened to the lady.
I don't mind that combo. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, no, I'll watch him.
If I had to, yeah, if I had to, if someone told me that was being remade and I had a short list to choose from, I might choose those two.
Dermot Mulroney?
I'm like a huge Dermot Mulroney fan, but he's definitely, I mean, when you watch him, he's not very over the top.
Do you like him
he's a very bit? Under the top. No. Oh. I do love Alan Tudyk, but I don't.
What's
I
your
don't,
type?
Albert Brooks.
Oh, the best.
You're like my modern day Albert Brooks,
God bless
to be
you.
Honest.
Thank
you know
very
that
much.
That's true.
I've heard that from time to time. I love that guy. Who
yeah.
doesn't
what
love
a great
that
person to be compared to, you lucky son of a bitch.
Thank you.
That's
I think of you as
that's why he's top of my brain.
There you go. I think of you as Albert Brooks a lot of times too.
God, that's so interesting that we share that comparison in common with each other.
What's your favorite Albert Brooks movie?
Defending Your Life.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that.
Oh,
one.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't, you know, some people are like, oh, you're going with the more recent ones, which, by the way, that's like in the 80s now or the very early 90s. I totally, I mean, like Modern Romance and Lost in America, those are great. And they're sort of more authentically Albert Brooks, like comedy album sort of comedy. But Defending Your Life to me is like the perfect movie. It's just so funny and charming, and Meryl Streep is sensational.
Well, that's what I like, because not that the other actors or actresses that he's worked with in other films aren't good. Like Julie Haggerty's great. Catherine, I'm blanking on her name, the lady from Modern Romance, she's great. But like him with Meryl Streep, you're like, oh my gosh, she's so charming and
she's
funny.
She's so warm. Oh, my gosh. She's so warm. And it warms him up. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just really warms him up. And it's such a sensitive movie that it's just so great to see them together. And, like, well, it's a, I love that that way into his neuroses, opposed to, like, the way you, you know what I mean? Like, filmmakers who have those neuroses who kind of attack them from different places, and kind of him coming at it in that way is, like, my favorite way of him being neurotic.
It's great. Well, yeah, because it makes him out of control. Makes it sound like it's wild, but he is. I mean, he is a victim of the whole world.
Yeah.
And then he bounces off of her. He bounces off of Rip Torn.
I mean, Rip Torn. How great is he?
Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
You have a little bit of Rip Torn in you too. We're really, now I'm just like, I can turn you into a, I've got you as Sybil.
Fine.
With all these different people.
You'll love my one woman show.
I will love your one woman musical. Thank you very much.
Miss Personality. That's like the opener and the closer.
It has to what's that word?
End?
No, the, like, I mean, first of all, yes. Mm-hmm. But when it it comes back, the reprise.
Callback?
Reprise.
Oh, the reprise. The
it's a musical term, please.
I'm so sorry.
Please, it's a musical
DSL
term.
Coda.
Oh God, now you've really gotten Latin on me.
That's sheet music talk.
Do you play an instrument?
I play.
Right now, today, in today's life, not in high school, because I am getting to that.
I don't. That was the one instrument that I played. I always wished I played piano. I have, like, piano player's hands. I have, like, giant
piano
string.
Fingers.
I've got long, yeah, weirdo hands.
I guess you can't. That's not an instrument that's sort of like, oh, well, listen, what you can just take your knowledge from playing the tuba.
You can say that, sure.
It's not easy to apply that to piano. The way I think there are some instruments that maybe go back and forth more easily.
Yeah. No, tuba does not really translate to, I think it's probably because it's the three valves. It's probably not too dissimilar from like a trumpet.
Yeah. A horn. You could get into another horn probably if you needed to.
Or a euphonium.
Euphonium.
Euphonium is like a baby tuba. It's the one that you can kind of, it's like teddy bear size.
Can you squeeze it like a teddy bear and hold it close at night?
And when you hold it, it goes. That's why you love
euphonium. So it's the Snuggles fabric softener bear. What if you only identified every kind of animal with like a commercial version of the animal?
That'd be fun. I think, don't we do that all? I mean, like,
I'm trying to think if I can think of a single other example.
I kind of go to like Disney animals. Like I go to like Jungle Book and things like that.
Did you see the new Jungle Book?
I did. I took
my daughter
to see
it yet.
It's a little more violent because I have two.
It looks like it's pretty polished and darker, and it's like Favreau and all that. Yeah.
And also, I think, like, I liked it. I have two younger daughters. I have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they got very freaked out at points. And it makes sense because there's a lot of fire in it, which is scary because it's like sort of fire in a jungle. And the other thing is, because all the characters other than Mowgli are animals, all they can do to fight is sink their fangs into each other, which when it's a cartoon, you know, like they can swat at each other and you can kind of, but when it's all sort of that
hyper realistic-ish
CG, those are claws.
Yeah.
Those are rocks.
Yeah.
They're falling.
Yeah.
You know, but like,
is it funny?
Yeah.
Is it just a total? So, because from the previews, you can't tell if they just abandon all of the goofiness of the original, which is really what I remember and loved and I was fond of.
It's interesting. They keep a couple of the songs. It does not look like a musical, but they try and play it kind of like, oh, here comes Baloo, and he just loves to sing that one song. And so it's Bill Murray and the kid singing Bare Necessities.
Huh. Okay.
So, sort of for me, that sentimental button, it gets pushed.
Yeah.
And that, I love that.
Yeah.
But it's a little weird because they don't really do a full number. It's kind of them just sort of floating down the river singing this song that they both magically know.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, did you guys watch the movie of the Jungle Book?
Yeah, well, that's what I imagine, that it sort of feels like, if it feels like they kind of put that in there for,
I think,
your
so.
For our generation, for anybody who's not seeing it for
you
the first time.
You said your generation. That's okay. I'm an older generation.
Well, I'm thinking we got a real only Murphy's in terms romance of you going with your.
You and
I'm thinking
your
of it
old
only
man
in
jokes.
Terms of you versus your daughters. Mm-hmm. And that made it sound like you guys were in some sort of fight with each other. I want you to know that's not how I see it.
That's all right.
That's how I see it.
I like it. I feel like we're in, you know, obviously we're in this big, like, let's take every Disney cartoon and make it into a live action movie.
Yeah.
I like a lot of them as cartoons. Me, I don't dislike a lot of the live action ones, but I mean, to me, that's the point of animation, is you get to go to these worlds and you have the just like, if you took out the characters and just looked at the background paintings, like some of the artistry is
wonderful.
So good.
Wonderful. You really can see how people, rich people, go down the rabbit hole, probably even almost literally, if they have a cell from Alice in Wonderland.
Nice. Okay. do you want to pause?
Do I need a minute?
It's okay.
No, I can pat myself on the back and talk. But of like collecting cells, you know, having an old cell from different.
That?
No, no.
I don't know why. I think it's because I've always seen them as animation.
Also, I think I said rich people, so I have to immediately exclude myself from that category.
Oh, I don't know. You've got your 24-hour chocolate fountain over here.
Yeah, I inherited that from... No.
From?
Willy Wonka. Oh! Chocolate Factory.
Nice. He left you something?
He did.
Wait, what happened to Willy?
He's passed away. He burned bright. He's
like
flamed out.
I like to say, no, or maybe he candied up.
He candied up.
I don't know. That's not a good
that
one.
Makes it for sure sound like it was maybe a heroin overdose. Yeah.
Well, Willie.
You know, right. No, you're right. If he were going to be on a serious drug, it would for sure be heroin.
This is a weird gear shift, but you said Willy Wonka. What's your feeling about Gene Wilder?
I love him.
Oh.
Love.
The best, right?
Love.
Stir Crazy was on TV the other night.
Oh, yeah.
And flipped in like right when they got into jail. I was like, oh, this is the best.
Yeah.
It's the best.
There really is like no one like him. I mean, you can sort of go. I mean, I'm not saying this is true for every actor, but there are certainly those comparisons that can be made where, you know, it's like Kevin Costner appears on the scene and people are like, he's Steve McQueen reincarnated. Right. And you sort of have these archetypes that if you even only go back like one generation, it's like, oh, okay, who's our generation's Paul Newman, or who's our generation's,
or who's our Jimmy Stewart, that kind of thing, right?
I feel like you can kind of track some of that, but I feel like, good God, I don't know that I think anyone has kind of a Gene Wilder quality.
I saw him interviewed, I think it was like on Turner Classic Movies or something, and he's telling a story about how he was at some event and Cary Grant was there. And he's freaking out because Gene Wilder's like, that guy's a movie star.
Yeah.
And Cary Grant, somehow he finds himself talking with Cary Grant. And Cary Grant says, see, the reason people like guys like you and me is like, because we're like normal guys. So the audience looks at us and think, oh, yeah, I'm just like them. And Gene Wilder's like, people think you and me?
People would lump us into the same.
Yeah, like, I'm a normal guy.
Yeah.
You're Cary Grant. Yeah. You're the biggest, handsomest Clark Kent, like, slab of meat. Like,
yeah.
But I love that to have Gene Wilder be inside that moment and be like, holy cow, yeah. Cary Grant's like saying, we're good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love
it's that. I mean, that's part of what's fun about hearing that other people that we admire nerd out, because, you know, there's some varying level of nerding out over someone that you think of as like a famous star person.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Well, it's humanizing. It's particularly when it's like someone you're a fan of all of a sudden talks about how much they love Squeeze or something like that. You're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And you see their eyes light up and they come alive.
Yes, yes.
That's my, like, do you ever listen to the Writers Panel podcast?
I mean, I know, and I've been to some, even in live.
Nice.
But,
well,
you know.
Well, that's what you do with your rich person money.
I go to Meltdown.
The most exclusive of
that's
comedy
right.
theaters.
All 20 seats.
He always wraps that interview up by saying, what are you watching now? What are you listening to? And it's great because I very much, like, I find most of my music through my brother. Like, my brother and I have like a little Dropbox, and online once a month he started putting in, here's what
great.
I'm listening to. Oh, it's the best.
Yeah. And how? What's the age difference? And are you older?
2 years. I'm 2 years. I'm the oldest, and then him, and then my sister is 2 years younger.
And so then two. And then your sister.
Mm-hmm.
Two and two. Okay. Oh, you're the oldest.
I am. I'm the trailblazer.
Are you the trailblazer?
Not really. I am pretty shy. I mean, I guess I'm not shy now. When I was like a kid, like elementary school, middle school, high school, I was shy.
Where was this?
Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, the shy state.
Yeah.
No.
The Athens of the Midwest.
That's right.
The Berkeley of Wisconsin.
That's right. That's funny because the last person, it won't, I don't think it will go in this order, but maybe it will.
It has to
it was McConville, and he's also from Wisconsin. So yeah. It's funny.
We met, he's like up northern Wisconsin, like almost
Minnesota-y. I know that he looks across his room. He was saying that his room faced a different state.
Minnesota. Yeah. He's like right on Minnesota. He's sort of like Eau Claire or something.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we met in Madison doing comedy sports.
Isn't that so funny?
Mm-hmm.
That was a totally unplanned coincidence, but that happens to me frequently with the podcast where totally randomly, circumstantially, the very last person I podcast will be from the same place as the next person.
Wow.
And sometimes they don't even know each other. So mm-hmm. the fact that you guys actually met in Madison is novel, but
yeah, we've known each other, I don't know, I'm not good at math, 20 years or something like that?
Look at that.
Long time?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I won't go into my long explanation of how little of Madison I've seen and why, but it does include me saying that I unfortunately thought I was going to be in Madison when I was there and wasn't, and that is the whole reason that I said yes. Listen, you're just going to have to listen to that episode to know more.
I will.
But yeah, that's a place that is just that and you know, Minnesota and mm-hmm. are just kind of great places for comedy.
Great place for comedy. Well,
people maybe don't necessarily know about or think of, but
I think Chicago, Twin Cities, yeah, proximity. Oh, well, I mean, you know, it's cold. So
gotta be funny.
You got many months to sit inside and think about what you'd do if there were other people around.
I guess when you're that far up north, you probably have like really dark winters in general too, where the sun kind of isn't around much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know how it is like in Los Angeles, like, you know, with like daylight savings, like, oh, wow, it got dark a lot sooner. Yeah. In the Midwest, it's like, oh, it got dark at like 5.
Yeah.
And, you know, as soon as the sun goes down, it was already cold.
Yeah.
But now it's, yeah, you don't go outside.
Did you play hockey and stuff?
Oh, God, no. I have weak ankles.
Oh.
Yeah, no, my body's betrayed me in many different ways.
But yet you could hold on to a tuba. That seems heavy. or is that a plate seated?
I was never in marching band. Oh, no. I was in, I don't know what they called it, honor band. Sort of like orchestra. And I played both the sousaphone and the tuba. Sousaphone is the one that sort of wraps around you and mm-hmm. sits on your shoulder. I think in that picture, that's a sousaphone.
Okay.
Yeah, the tuba is the one that you hold.
I was so preoccupied with you being barefoot that I did not identify it properly as a sousaphone.
Can I explain the picture?
I wish you would.
So here's the deal. You know, it's coming up on senior year. You got to go get your picture taken. And it's Madison, Wisconsin. So you go there and the photographer says, you know, bring many changes of clothing. And so I had a suit. And I think when we were there talking to the guy, there must have been some demo photo in like the little lobby showcase area mm-hmm. that was somebody in all white. Mm-hmm. And so that must have somehow resonated. Because I'm not in general a person who wears all that, all white.
Listen, you would have fit right into Defending Your Life. The idea of a dead person in a band playing sousaphone barefoot in heaven wearing all white is just about that movie.
The thing behind that is, so I had my appointment. For whatever reason, my mom couldn't drive me, and I was not driving yet. So we lived just close enough, probably like a couple miles away, that it was feasible that I could walk.
Uh-huh.
So it's August in Wisconsin. No. And Madison, sort of geographically, is kind of like it's at swamp level. It's not a swamp area, but the ground is very low to the water level. Mm-hmm. So it's just humid and mosquito-y. And I have curly hair.
Uh-huh.
So I'm carrying a sousaphone and a giant bag filled with clothes. So I'm walking a couple of miles. So by the time I get there, I'm just like a melting stick of butter. Just shiny.
What a terrible idea.
And my curly hair is as curly as it's ever been.
Yeah.
And of course, because I walked, I thought it would take 15 minutes. It probably took like an hour.
Oh, sure.
So I'm super late. So we're rushing to try and get through it. So I'm just putting on different stuff. He's like, yeah, that's a good one. And so I put on the white stuff with the sousaphone. Because they said, if you bring an instrument, play it.
Sure.
And I was sort of, I always knew that it was weird to play the tuba. I didn't pick it because I had a strong calling to it. I was in band, I think around 6th or 7th grade is when you start playing instruments in school. And I wanted to play drums. And the teacher, the band teacher sort of said, like, I don't want all you boys back there slamming stuff. And I took that to heart. I was like, oh, God, I don't want to be one of those boys that slams things.
You were a
things.
Good kid in that way?
Right? I was always very, like, I wanted to follow the rules and do well. Oh, yeah. So for some reason, I kind of looked around the room and thought, oh, tuba. Everybody loves a tuba player, right? Oh, you want to talk to that guy. That guy's... You know, and this is the heart of that weirdo, self-conscious, shy time. So I was like, yeah, who wouldn't want to talk to that guy? Picturing myself as some sort of like
a martini glass in one hand and a tuba in the other.
I guess. I don't know. I thought like, oh, this will be cool.
Yeah.
And I picked the least cool.
That really is endearing.
Thank you.
Get to the barefoot part.
So that's why I have a tuba. So then for some reason, I think because the set was all white, because you know, they use sort of like those scrims or sykes, whatever you call it. And so I guess he didn't want to get dirt on his syke. He's like, you're all in white, so take off your shoes and socks. And as I say it now, it sounds creepy. It didn't feel creepy. But I just remember like... The other day when you asked me for a photo, I clicked on that and I went, oh, God, no.
I'm so happy that you have it. It means the world to me.
It's a moment in time.
Oh, my God. Wait, did he say anything like, don't worry, your feet will be cut out of the photo, so it won't be...
No, it was very much the point. It was like, you're just a cool teenage kid walking around all dressed in white, in shorts, barefoot. With a sousaphone.
Oh, that is the picture that they would show if you had become a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have been like, let me tell you what you can analyze. Some FBI profiler would have been like, I was able to analyze his killing type by the barefoot, and then the tuba represents blah, blah, blah. It's like,
and as soon as the photo comes up, a room full of FBI profilers are like,
oh, yikes.
Troubled.
Yeah.
A troubled youth. Oh.
What's his middle name? Because we all need to call him by three names immediately.
Oh, Christian Peter Tallman. Just a sexless D&D loving comic book reading, just little
That's
nerd.
Great.
Oh yeah.
Did you get tall young, or did you have a growth spurt?
I must have had a growth spurt. I don't ever remember someone remarking how unusually big I was, so I'm going to say I had a normal.
Yeah.
Whatever, on the doctor chart of height.
At least you were never like a shrimp for long enough. Were you ever a shrimp long enough to be like, your last name is incorrect?
Mm-hmm.
You did.
Well, but you know, any name that a child can take apart and mess you up. Yeah. So, no, I think like around fifth grade, my friend Alan Ritchie figured out, because my name is Christian Tallman. He's like, oh, from now on, we're going to call you Jewish Short Woman.
Sure.
Not really anything other than just opposites.
Right.
But yeah, but that was that.
But at least it was your friend saying that.
That's true. He was funny.
I mean, your name isn't Dick Van Dyke. He's done all right.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That's right. I forgot about that. Are you talking about Diagnosis Murder?
Well, people call him Penis Van Lesbian sometimes.
What?
Which is not the opposite. I'm not saying they call him to his face, but that's a joke that I was privy to from a young age.
What?
Dick Van Dyke, Penis Van Lesbian. So that's it.
Oh, I get it. But why would you do such a thing to Dick Van Dyke?
I don't know. He's a legend.
Mr. Van Dyke, I should say.
Yes, you should. I don't know, because of the reasons aforementioned, which is that if there's
opposites.
A joke to be made about someone's, in this case, it was just synonyms, but you ended up with opposites.
Well, clearly, the people you were running with were pretty advanced with their joke telling.
Yeah.
I thought you were referencing, when I first moved here, I was on an episode of Diagnosis Murder with
you. Dick were?
I was diagnosed, Janet, with a case of the murders.
Wait, were you a tuba playing assassin who left his barefoot prints as his signature, because no one ever gets footprints? Like, they keep fingerprints on file, they don't keep footprints on file, so you can, if you touch everything with your feet, you can't be caught.
Is this now going to be our relationship? From now on, you're going to be like, hey,
how can I compare anything you're talking about to being a barefoot tubist?
Look what I had printed up on giant foam core all over this room.
This t-shirt with your picture on it? Oh, nothing.
Oh.
What? Okay, were you the victim, a suspect, or the murderer?
It was It was the season premiere. I don't know what season was, but it was the first episode.
I got to be honest. I've never seen an episode. Is he a doctor who diagnosed, who also solves crimes?
Thank you. Yes. Okay, sort of, I think, take Murder, She Wrote, remove her, add him. Mm-hmm. Can't be a writer because that's the same thing. So he's a doctor.
Got it.
And then I don't even know if he's a coroner. Mm. I think he might just be like a really good doctor.
He's probably just like a great family physician who can somehow use his knowledge of the human psyche just in his experience day to day plus his medical.
And he
knowledge.
Does funny pratfalls.
Oh, he does? No. I didn't know that.
He was an old man.
I thought maybe there was still some physical funniness.
I don't remember it. The episode I was on, the reason I mentioned that it was the premiere for that season was because they had a lot of guest stars. Mm-hmm. I was not a guest star. Mm-hmm. But the episode was called The Roast. So I was playing a Jim Carrey-like upstart comedian who crashes a roast of the Dick Van Dyke characters.
Oh, okay.
So all the comedians on the dais, it was Tom Poston, Tim Conway, Steve Allen, Audrey Meadows, David Leisure, who was Joe Isuzu. He was sort of big at the moment.
Joe Isuzu, yeah.
And then Julia Duffy from the Newhart Show. It was like a bunch of them.
Oh, wow.
And so I
was that one of your first acting jobs?
Pretty much. I had done I'd done stage stuff in New York.
Yeah.
And then right when I moved out here, I did that. Yeah. So that was crazy because it was all these celebrities, in between takes, they had sort of back behind the set a giant circle of all those director chairs.
Oh, yeah.
And because I was one of the people, they let me sit there, but I didn't say anything.
Oh, yeah.
And all they did was just talk about, like, at one point, Norm Crosby was one of the guys. And at one point he goes, "You want to hear what kind of asshole Robert Goulet is?" And so they're telling stories like that where you're like,
what a gift.
It really was. And I was very aware of the fact, like, I should not be here.
But I am not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, until any one of them looks at me, I'm just going to pretend like, I'm sitting here with my script and stuff.
Great.
And because they were all sort of peers with Dick Van Dyke, so he would kind of come and sit with me. The best.
That's a great early career job.
It was a good one.
What a joy.
Yeah.
Did you, based on everything you just described in high school, did that include theater? D&D still allowed some time for theater.
There's always time for D&D, Janet.
Yeah.
Maybe later on tonight.
Are we playing it right now? I've never played, so I don't know how it works.
Elf, you are confronted by a bugbear.
Is that how it works? Is a bugbear real?
Wait, hold on.
I don't know anything about D&D.
You don't know anything about D&D? Not even in your elbow rubbings with the nerds?
I know. But this is the thing, is that I've talked to people who play D&D before. I think McConville may have been one of them.
That sounds right.
But no one has ever... This is as far as it's ever gotten for me, is I know there's a multi-sided die because people make fun of that. Mm-hmm. Potentially you keep it in a velvet pouch. I'm not sure.
I do have my dice in a velvet pouch.
And people were like, "Oh yeah, it's role play where, you know, there's wizards and I assume Dungeons and Dragons because that's in the name.
Sure.
And that there's probably elves." Sure. I don't know that I've ever learned anything beyond that it's like, "Okay, you know that you have your powers and you know that you're essentially just hanging out with your friends and you're in kind of inhabiting these characters
and you go on adventures."
You go on adventures.
Yeah. I would say because I think it was I'm going to say it was almost a direct result of Lord of the Rings as a novel.
Yeah, guys, for those of you who are younger, I want to reassure you that they were a series of books.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. These are just from the Blu-rays.
And nor were they new books. When we were young, they were still not new.
Yeah, these were like things like our parents would read to us. Or like when you were a younger kid, you'd see it like on a college kid's shelf and be like, ooh, Return of the King.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
It's very much exactly what you're thinking. It's wizards and elves and fighters and that sort of.
And would you wear clothes that kind of represented that in some way?
You could. Honestly, it was really more very similar to this. It's people sitting around a table. It's all like theater of the mind. One person is called the Dungeon Master, and they're essentially the storyteller.
I guess I knew that there was a Dungeon Master.
Right.
Maybe this will be a thing where as you tell me, I'll go like, oh, I've heard all these bits and pieces in various times in my life, but never put them all together.
And you have a full set of dwarf armor over in the
I don't
corner.
Want to talk about that right now. All right, well. I inherited that from, again, Willy Wonka.
Really?
Yeah, he was a big D&D guy.
No, I didn't... Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. The Oompa Loompas were kind of like D&D dwarves or maybe or a halfling, perhaps, because you couldn't call them hobbits.
Oh.
Because that was like a copyright thing.
Oh, okay. So a halfling meant a hobbit.
Yeah. So, but it basically it meant that same, but it was like big feet, lots of fur, good at being thieves and burglars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you would go on adventures and you'd fight orcs. You'd fight...
Would your friends be playing orcs, or does everyone kind of there dealing with that as a fictional thing from the outside?
I guess it would depend on the dungeon master. I think the general idea was we are the main characters, and then everything else, every other NPC, non-player character,
I see,
is controlled by the dungeon master.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
The dungeon master could pretend to be, I'm the tavern master, I'm the king, I'm the queen, you know, all that
okay.
kind of stuff.
All right.
Yeah, and so, and then, yeah, dice determine sort of the randomness of life and things like that.
And so how, and people could just do this for hours at a time.
It's...
Or maybe still do.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's probably similar to the way people get together and, like, watch... a sporting event or the Oscars, where it's sort of like we're playing D&D, but it's also
it's
the crosstalk.
It's our yeah.
And one of the things about Dungeons and Dragons that I think, unless you play it, you don't really quite understand, is like it just never stops. Like there is no satisfying. Wow, we really got a lot done in these 4 hours. We were together for 4 hours, and I think we got down the hallway of the dungeon and went into a room.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of like this.
Are there cards that you're pulling up too? How are you just determining who, what happens to whom?
Well, that's kind of up to the dungeon master. Like you have, everybody has a piece of paper.
It sounds like too much power.
Oh, I'd like to see what Janet's like as a dungeon master. I think you'd be a cruel god of the universe.
Yeah. I might get hungry for more power.
It's as the dungeon master, you're supposed to prepare the adventure. And when D&D came out, like there's a box set, and then you could go buy modules, which was, I'm going to go buy, and it was called like Loth the Demon Queen. Mm-hmm. And so, and it came with maps and sort of a breakdown of what was in every
room.
So
someone is doing a lot of this sort of story weaving before it comes to the group of people.
Yeah.
I think in my mind, it was like...
Improv?
Yeah, like it was like there was so much of it was just in the moment, like, hold on, I've come up with a new something that happens.
I think a lot of people play that because honestly, there's no like set. Some people are very much by the book and let's reference everything because that's the thing. Like there are those hardcover books like the Dungeon Master Guide, the Monster Manual, and inside they're filled with charts and rules and things. But because you're the boss, if you're the Dungeon Master, you can be kind of like,
so you 10 have orcs walk your... in. Orthodox sects of D&D followers, and maybe you're more relaxed, reformed.
Yeah. Oh, that's probably me. And also, again, I was like 9. So you have to imagine it's children playing.
But people still do play it as adults.
Oh, sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
did you do it all through high school?
No. I feel like what happened was is I was more of that nerd kid. And then around freshman year of high school, my mom said, you can't sit around at the house during the summertime. You have to go do something. Mm-hmm. So she handed me it was like a summer school catalog of classes.
Oh, sure, sure.
And I found musical theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, I want to do that. It was like...
A whole new way to be a nerd.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it was the shy part of me wanting to talk to people, wanting to connect.
Well, the same guy who reached out and grabbed that tuba, hoping that was going to be his gateway to best friendsmanships.
I thought we forgot about that kid. Nope. You're not going to let go of that, are you? You're like a dog with a bone.
Never.
yes.
I'm the dungeon master. This is my dungeon. It's called a podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
You're going to have to face that tuba over and over and over again. Dope.
Until I finally embrace it and start carrying it with me today.
Then it'll be your weapon. Then it'll be your most prized weapon.
I don't know. I don't somehow see a positive spin on me being the tuba man.
We'll keep working on it.
Yeah. Oh, I have no doubt
about
that.
I'm sure we will. Did you play any sports?
No, I had a heart.
You
I
just
have.
Reacted so harshly to my hockey question that I wasn't sure if that was a general umbrella.
I went to a lot of hockey games. My mom, that's something my
that's
mom and I would do. Oh, yeah, hockey, that's a sport.
I mean going to them.
Oh, well, what I mean is I like the game of hockey.
Yeah.
I like basketball. Like, I like a lot of those things. I have a heart murmur. So I was never allowed to participate in actual, like, coordinated sports.
Man, that's tough when you sort of have that thrust on you because you don't ever get to know what you would have been like and how you, I mean, that's,
yeah.
And I don't mean tough. Like, first of all, I avoided sports at all costs after a certain age. Mm-hmm. I just thought, this isn't me. This isn't me. And now I really like doing stuff that's a little more sporty, although I'm not like on a team of any kind, mm-hmm. which some of our friends are, as you know.
Sure.
But, so I'm not, there's no judgment there. Cause by high school I was like, what are the things I can do to not do sports?
Yeah. Well, also, especially in high school, go into a locker and change in front of everybody.
Forget it.
Yeah. That's no,
nobody. Forget it. Although I guess I was in dance, but then it's like, you're just with your dance nerd friends and there's like an understanding that no one's going to stare at each other and you don't have to take showers or anything.
Ballet?
Go into your, no, it was like modern dance. It was like the general sort of whatever dance encompasses in high school.
Oh, so you were barefoot?
A little of everything. Oh, I was barefoot in a unitard.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a little anecdote. I don't think I've told this on the podcast before. It's maybe my most embarrassing memory of late.
Thank you for sharing this with me.
But I also cherish it so much.
All right.
I don't think I've told the story. Because I feel like I would remember releasing this and unleashing it to the world. But I was at a Comic-Con in Austin last year. And these adorable boys were driving me to go get like groceries or something.
Okay.
And they were playing some CDs that they had just gotten, like a friend was going to get rid of them, or maybe they got them at a yard sale.
Sure.
And so we sort of had the conversation of like, ooh, you got all these, what gems you got at the yard sale.
Right.
And one of them was Annie Lennox, Diva.
Oh, sure.
And I was like, oh God, this album. Like, I remember when it came out. Love it, love it, love
it. Walking on broken glass, Janet.
I felt like I was walking on broken glass. Is not a positive thing to feel. Mm-hmm. So they were like, oh, let's put that one in. They put it in. This song comes on the album. And I was like, oh, this, I did a dance to this when I was younger. Like when this album came out, I remember doing like a, you know, you got to pick your own music. And I did a dance to this. And I was like, I'm trying to remember when this album came out because I can't remember exactly what year it would have been. In fact, I can't even totally remember the dance, but I have a very strong memory of this being associated with a dance I did. And then moments later, I realized that what I was thinking of was that Demi Moore stripped to it in Striptease.
What?
I somehow transposed a movie I've seen once.
And loved.
And loved.
I mean, we all did.
I mistook my modern dance career, my brief modern dance career in high school, for Demi Moore's naked body in a terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was me, Chris Tallman.
Can we unpack this?
Please.
So at that moment, you have that realization.
Yeah.
Do you then say to...
I did. I said it as fast as I thought of it. I said it out loud and I was crying. I was laughing so hard.
It's amazing. I wonder what it is. Now, when you saw Striptease, did it resonate with you?
No, I didn't even know I remembered it. Like, the first thing that came back to me was, like, when it hit me like someone punched me in the face, that had happened, because it wasn't, it's not a movie I talk about, think about, have any, like, I don't refer to it. It's not a movie I make jokes about. It's like a forgotten blip in my life. Yet somehow her dancing naked to that song got stuck in my brain and turned into, when I heard the song again, I guess the last time I must have heard that song was probably in my one viewing of the movie. And so somehow when I heard it again, like Pavlovian, but not, because I've only seen that movie once, but somehow those two things, you know, like cemented and together for about 2 minutes before I realized.
When you were telling the boys the story.
And I wasn't imagining myself taking my clothes off.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It was like this murky sort of like, I erupted with this factoid before it was fully formed. It was like, oh, I did a dance to this. And then as I started trying to think, like, What was the dance? Like, that's what was it like? Thing. I know I did, but like a
Betty Page, and then it just haircut.
Yeah, I mean, it was so nebulous, and then it so immediately came into focus, and the person that was in focus was Demi Moore's tits.
Well,
yeah.
Demi Moore's tits are with us every day in a way.
Every day, if you want them to be.
When there was one.
They're for all of us.
When there was one set of footprints, that's when Demi Moore's tits was carrying you. We're carrying you. We'll figure it out. I love that.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Did the teenage boy, not teenage.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever thought something happened to you and then found out that it was something you'd seen or something that happened to someone else?
I don't know. I feel like, I think because of improv, usually my memory is kind of sharp on stuff like yeah. that. I've done all kinds of.
I thought the same. Let's go through and listen to my entire music catalog. And if you think you did a dance to something.
Mm-hmm.
It may not
oh, wait a minute. I was in this play. Oh, yeah, I remember this one. It's me. It was like me and five other guys. Like, we're in a play, and then we all take off our clothes. Oh, no, that's Full Monty.
Yeah.
That's Full Monty.
Hey, you could have done a production of the Full Monty.
I still can.
Broadway thing.
I'm still.
No one is stopping you.
Still viable as a potentially. I could be a Mark Addy type.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Don't you ever forget it.
Why am I telling you this?
Because of what I just told you. You feel sorry for me, so you're trying to tell me something?
No. Mark Addy makes me think of he was Fred Flintstone in the second Flintstones movie.
Oh, really?
And I remember I auditioned for that. Again, right after I moved here, I remember getting to audition because John Goodman was not coming back.
Right.
He had artistic integrity. He's not going to do Fred Flintstone 2, sir.
That's right. He had the integrity to do the first.
So I just remember that I got to audition for that and thinking that it was like, this is it, guys. I'm auditioning. Again.
See ya, suckas.
Not anything more than an audition.
Right.
In an room.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, like, that was my relationship, especially when I moved out here.
When did you come out here? Because I feel like I met you before I even moved here. It was mm-hmm. right
at I.O.
as I was going to move here, basically.
I remember talking to you at I.O.
And then you were hosting Crossballs, and that was, like, a big deal to me, that Besser was like, hey, you want to do something on my show?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, yes.
Well, yeah. It's Besser.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the UCB, I don't think you can overestimate what they are or
no and have become since even then for yeah. sure yeah
I moved here. I lived in New York for 6 years and then I moved. I didn't mean necessarily to move out here. I came out here for a pilot season in January of 99.
Oh, okay.
And got a job, and so I just stayed. So what is that, 99, what is it, 2016 now, so that's 17 years, is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah. So you've been here a handful of years before.
When did you get here?
I think it was like 2005. Okay. End of 2005, early 2006, something like that.
So that's when Crossballs was?
Mm-hmm. No, well, it could have been a little before that because I hadn't moved yet. I remember I stayed on my friend's couch.
Oh, you hadn't done it when you... Oh, that's... So you were on Crossballs before you moved? Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
That's a great... And was that part of the impetus for like, I got to get in there,
I think,
man.
So, yeah. It was definitely kind of part of this, like... I think it was like I was down here... probably for pilot season.
Filming
Catwoman.
And it
was like, while you're here, that was the other thing that I shot before I moved here.
Yeah. By the way, I'm waiting for...
I'm waiting for that story.
No, I'm waiting for the Catwoman 2. Starring
to reprise so I can come back.
Well, I want you to be girl. Catwoman. You'd be a good Catwoman.
Oh, boy. That's hard. That's tough to picture.
Why?
I don't know if I can harness my goofiness long enough to be in that kind of outfit.
Let's say, just for fun argument's sake, like, well, you've already been Cora. Like, you're already kind of part
of,
like...
No, that's
like,
a cartoon that I don't have to embody physically.
But you're playing that character. Mm. You have that in you, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you were going to be... in some sort of, like, let's call it the sort of genre-y stuff. Is there one that would be most interesting to you, or...
Like, you mean superhero genre, or like a genre?
I'm just
kind of
opening it up. Like, it could be Lord of the Rings-y, it could be superhero-y, but I mean, sort of that heroes
fantasy,
and villains.
Imaginary, that
well,
kind of thing.
You know.
That's a fun question.
Star Wars-y, I mean, it could
be... Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jungle Book-y?
I mean, it would be fun to do, like, a superhero-y thing, for sure. I guess I associate that really positively now because of the sort of Guardians of the Galaxy type Ooh. Sensibility of like Ooh. Very funny and relaxed and sort of ironic, but still mm-hmm. with heart and, you know, with a lot of action, all that kind of stuff. That
and
would be
it looks
fun.
Beautiful.
And it looks beautiful. But I do like sci-fi stuff too. Did mm-hmm. did you like sci-fi too when you were?
Oh, I liked all
Star
that
Trek
stuff.
And Star Wars. Star and all
Trek
that kind of stuff.
My stepfather was really into Star Trek, so that's sort of hot because I think I was more Star Wars. I remember Star Trek being on TV and kind of watching it, but there's also, like, for a little while, they made Star Trek into a Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, so
loving that.
Yeah.
As a kid, I loved all the nerd stuff. The Sid and Marty Krofft, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Comic books. Yeah, weekly, I would go on Saturdays, I would ride my bike to the comic book store. And, you know, because when you're a kid, it's like, okay, I have $3. So that means, because comics at that point maybe were like 50 cents or something, so you could really count, that's six comics if I do it right. So reading was a big escape for me. And that's kind of what brought me to Dungeons & Dragons, because Dungeons & Dragons was sort of like live action reading. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, it's a story, but I get to decide.
Sure.
And also, again, being that shy kid, the idea of being somebody else. That's how I got into acting. I got into acting because the idea of going back to that musical theater class thing, I was like, I get to be somebody else. I get to be somebody who can talk to people and is confident and then funny. Like that was the goal.
How was that? You said that was in high school?
That was like right as I started high school. And that almost exactly lined up time-wise with the first time I saw Comedy Sports, which was the improv group so I learned improv and acting sort of at the same time, and so I always think of them as being very tied
lucky
to each
you
other.
I'm always impressed when people start improv young, because that was like the last thing for me.
Well, it could be super scary.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like the idea of, like, the way I feel about stand-up, I think, is the way a lot of people feel about improv. I'm terrified of stand-up.
Oh, yeah. I'm terrified of stand-up, too. I guess I was also terrified of improv for a very long time. I think it was like that, like, oh, that's a thing I should be good at. So if I'm not, I'm going to feel like a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. And so I was very fearful in a lot of ways about stuff like that.
About improv?
Yeah. Where I would be like, oh, I'm a funny kid in class and I'm in the school plays.
Mm-hmm.
But God forbid I actually have to show up and be funny on purpose, that's when everyone will find out I'm a fraud.
Right.
I think I really had a lot of fear about stuff like that as a young person.
Well, I don't think you have to be a young person to be scared of that. I think like that is the weirdo secret of improv, is that you don't, the harder you try to be funny, the less successful you are. Every once in a while, like anything, you kind of stumble into it and you're like, oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
And then you try that same character or joke in another class or scene and you're like, God, that just sucked.
Right.
Oh yeah, no, I feel like especially with improv, the trick is just like, you are enough.
Yeah.
You have all the answers inside of you.
Just having a team. I mean, that's, and now it's my favorite thing. You know, it's my, as soon as it became a thing I was comfortable with, it became my favorite thing so quickly. And I just did an interview with someone, like a press interview for something, and someone was kind of asking me about that, and they were kind of talking about, they brought up the festival as well and sort of said, I don't know, they were just sort of talking about like, what do people who don't do those things, what are things that kind of make the crossover in terms of like team, like being a team player or whatever.
Like, what are the applications of improv
of improv? It sort of went into that place. And the more I talked about it, the more I was like, yeah, this is my favorite thing in the world. Like on so many levels, up to and including just the social quality of it and the trusting kind of team play. I mean, that's the further I dive into the importance of that, the further away I get from something like stand up, because I realize I can't apply any of my favorite things about improv to stand up, which is this whole idea of being on stage with a bunch of people and feeling like you have a safety net at any given moment. And that's my favorite feeling. My favorite feeling is contributing to something and feeling like I made it better, but completely matched with that feeling is the feeling that I'm flailing and someone coming in and making something good out of it.
Yeah.
That feeling of being rescued is just as powerful to me as the feeling of rescuing someone else.
Oh, and absolutely.
Not to say that the only enjoyment is born out of failure, but just those moments where you feel like, oh my God, I love this person. And there's something, those stupid trust exercises that people do when they do work retreats, like all of those cliches that we all roll our eyes at and make fun of about those retreats, the best version of that is truly present in great improv every time, where you feel like there's part of me that's like, Chris, I would trust my life with you.
Yeah, it's exciting. There's a this Comedy Sports, the improv theater where I started, like they're having their national tournament right now. And it's a great thing because Comedy Sports is in like, I don't know, 25 cities or something. So once a year, like any other business, there's I'm going to call it a convention. That's not exactly what it is. But people from every city meet. They agree. This year we're in Indianapolis. So 110 improvisers from all over the country, some of whom have met each other, most of whom don't, but they all have improv in common. They get together for a week. And again, it's like Comic-Con. It's like anything else. It's like people like-minded with that love of improv get together. And it is the most fun week as an improviser. Oh, yeah. It's I'm sure it's a similar thing with the Sketchfest. You know, it's like-minded people getting together for a week and mixing up the casts and, you want to do this thing? Yeah. Like, and seeing that's other great. People perform. Oh, you know, it's the best.
Now, because you got into that and when you got into musical theater and stuff when you were in high school, you said that, I guess I'm drawing the conclusion that you probably weren't very popular with the girls when you were a kid. Did that change for you with high school? Because did you get a different kind of confidence? And by the way, I have a lot of friends who were very confident in some ways and not confident in others, which I feel like I've even brought up on the podcast. Like somebody who's so, you know, fiercely funny and like unafraid to sort of do this, that, and the other, but then gets in a room with a girl he likes and can't.
Yeah, I think
form words. You know,
I think by the time, like, let's say, like by senior year, I think because I was in that show by that point, and it was unusual. Most of the people in Comedy Sports at the point were in college or older, so that was sort of an anomaly. I was like the youngest one, so I think that helped certainly as far as my confidence and stuff. But I mean, you know, it's like I think I so badly wanted to have a girlfriend that I would just choke. And I had, you know, I dated people, amazing women, but like I don't know that I was, I think I wanted it so much. I don't think really until I was here in my 30s that I find, you know, it's like you, I don't know if everybody has this experience, but I wanted to be in a relationship so much that I think I would kind of box myself out of them. Like, you know, Jeff Davis? Jeff Davis described it to me once as eyebrows up and eyebrows down. And he was like, when you go someplace, you want to be, you can be one of two things. You can be eyebrows up or eyebrows down. Eyebrows up is looking around, your eyes are wide open, like, is someone here? And it comes off as needy. It comes off, and that's not attractive. Or you can be eyebrows down, which is, oh yeah, I'm just hanging out here, I'm relaxed, I'm talking in my drink, and just whatever. And for whatever reason, we are, probably it's a big generalization, but I feel like we're more drawn to the people who are eyebrows down, which is, I'm comfortable in my skin, and I genuinely don't need anybody else to feel better about me.
Yeah.
I think that's the distinction.
I think that's a fair generalization. I think what it kind of reminded me of with you, as you were saying you wanted to be in a relationship, is to that thing that we get into. I think we all have different versions of this. And for some people, there's this thing that recurs, and whether it's socialized, like we're taught to want that, or whether it really is a genuine hunger or desire inside of us, that it becomes like, that's like a concept that has to have another participant in it to exist. But if you're chasing the concept, that in and of itself is like, doesn't really work. Like women who, you know, women and men, absolutely. I think the social cliche is women, which is why I brought it up. Not because I feel that way, but this sort of idea of like, I want to be married rather than like, I would love to find the person I want to be married to, but I don't want to get married unless I find that person.
Right.
Rather than like, I know I want to be married. I know I want to have kids. And I think that's what gets confusing for me is that, of course, it's great to set goals. I'm not great at it. I've sort of stumbled into a lot of the stuff that I've had in my life. But and maybe there are things that I could have been more successful at if I had like laser focused. But I think I think there's something to this idea of like maybe you wanted to be in a relationship so much that it was just about that rather than being able to make that real connection, because that that sort of hunger for this, the feeling of what that might be like was less tangible than
Well, I think it had more to do with wanting to I wanted to be in a relationship because I wanted to feel like I was lovable. I want, like, it had more to do with the things about me that, which isn't to say that I think it gets messy, because also in there you could, you also, and I'm attracted to her. And like,
of
that's,
course.
It's not so clearly like, oh,
absolutely.
But I think that's always where I would get myself into trouble. And, you know, it's like, and then when you're not with somebody, you're like, God, what the fuck is wrong with me? I'm so fat. I'm so all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like now I don't, I know not to worry about that stuff. You know, I think that's always kind of where I go to when people say, oh, if you knew then what you know now. I'm like, yeah, I wish I knew the same thing as I was saying about improv. I wish I knew that I was enough at that point.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And the wanting and the hunger, it's like you spend so much energy on wanting something that, like, yeah, it's great being in love. It's great having somebody to hold hands with. But if you're not, you know, it's the thing people say. It's like, if you're not okay with who you are, why would any, like, being in a relationship is not going to fix that.
Yeah. You're not allowing the, there, it's weird because you'd think that like a bunch of self-love would take up too much space, but really it's the thing that opens up all of the rest of the space in your life to be thinking about someone else and not just about what someone else feels for you, but all of that room to, you know, be caring of someone else and take care of that person, be taken care of and all that.
Yeah. When I was in my early mid 30s, I kind of gave up. I sort of said to myself, oh, maybe I'm not going to get married. Maybe I'm not, because I'd been in a few serious relationships that didn't work out. And I was kind of like, oh, maybe, because I always want, I really wanted to be a parent. And I was like, oh, maybe my life is going to, maybe I'm going to be like Uncle Chris. Maybe somebody else I know is going to have a kid and I'll have a relationship with that kid, which is a very sad realization to come to. It's like, it's very like, oh, okay. But once I kind of let that in and lived with that for a while, I think all of a sudden, like, I was like, oh, suddenly I was ready for what I, for to meet my wife, which is great. But it's like, Jesus, that's a road of trials to have to go
through. Sure. But that is the way that it comes for some of us. Absolutely. Listen, I can't believe this, but I meant to start our MASH game a few minutes ago.
Oh, start it.
I got to get into it because I've got some good categories. Now, in my mind, as I've been sort of listening to you talk now, I got to start out with this one. So let's do three comic book... well, let me ask this. Are there three comic books or comic book worlds or characters that you would like to see made into movies that haven't been yet?
That haven't been. Ooh.
I don't even know if that's...
I would love to see a Fantastic Four movie made... I don't mean to talk shit, but
everyone knows
made
that
well.
They're not great,
I think the Fantastic Four... Part of what makes Fantastic Four work is obviously they're sort of this weird family, but also it's they're of a certain time. They're of that kind of like... JFK, New Frontier, like science is this unexplored world. And like, because they essentially they're astronauts kind of before there really were astronauts. So, yeah, I kind of think like, oh, New York, like sort of 60s, early 60s, Mad Men, New York.
Ooh, I
but
love it.
With superheroes.
Yeah, I love
to me,
it.
That's sort of how I see Fantastic
Four.
That's
great.
So that'd be, I would go there.
Okay, great.
What else do I like? I really like Doctor Strange, and that's all like magic and alternate dimensions and
love it.
You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Anything can happen, and it's a little bit darker. Like Doctor Strange was modeled, I guess, originally after Vincent Price. I love
that's
sort of weirdo, gothy.
Yes.
And then what's a good third one? I really like Wonder Woman. I'm gonna Paradise Island. I see. As a man, I'm not allowed on Paradise Island. Uh-huh. If a man sets foot on Paradise Island, the Amazons lose their strength.
Yeah.
So, but like, I'm very excited for that movie coming out. Mm-hmm. I think that character is gonna be like how Captain America in the Marvel Universe mm-hmm. kind of got people excited. Yeah. I think she's going to do that for DC.
Okay. I guess I shouldn't put her down because that's already in progress. Yeah. Unless it's just the wish of you wanting it to be what you want it to be.
God, I'm trying to think of another world. The Batcave. I want to go to the Batcave.
Great.
Oh, love Batman. Oh, Batman and Spider-Man are my two favorites.
Love it. Okay. Let's do vacation homes. You know, you'll get a mansion, apartment, shack, or house. Let's do three places... Three places you don't get sunburnt. I'm going to go... I have to. There's no... Everyone would be disappointed if I didn't go this route. Yeah. They can be places and maybe should be places that don't exist in real life. So it could be Hobbiton.
Mordor. Who doesn't want to live in Hobbiton? Wouldn't... This house, by the way, does not like... I don't want to say like if in any way feels underground, but it's so cozy here. This is what you would want a hobbit hole to be, don't you think?
I think that is a huge compliment.
Oh, yeah. I think it's like, isn't that what you want is like beautiful wood? Yeah, like your own hobbit hole? Yeah. For sure I would want that. Because I picture like in your hobbit hole, there's always like a little like a copper kettle of stew cooking over
it's
the fire.
Wonderful in your hobbit hole 24/7.
And also those weirdo long pipes, like where the stem of the pipe is a good foot long and very narrow.
Yeah.
I don't smoke, but I think that is neat.
I agree.
Okay, so that, other fantasy realms. Well, then I want to go sci-fi. Oh, like Star Wars. Where do I want to go in Star Wars?
Yeah, where do you want to go in Star Wars?
Well, part of me wants to go to the cantina where all the aliens are, because who does not want to see... Don't you want to see those aliens?
Yeah, I really want to get up close and personal with the ones that especially you sort of flash by that you don't get to really see and get to know.
Like Muftak and or Cabe. Boshek, would you like to hang out with Boshek?
I mean, I think we're at the point now where I'm not sure I cannot include this, even if you end up with another Star Wars area.
But I don't want to go to Jabba's palace. Yeah, I want to be clear about that. No, the cantina, that's fun. The cantina is fun. You can have a space drink. You can talk to Chewbacca.
You're not in any danger in this. Whatever.
No, there's a little
unless
danger.
You want a little danger.
Well, I think Mos Eisley, it's a wretched hive of scum and villainy. Like, there is a little danger there. But Jabba's Palace, you're going to die. Clear. Yeah. You're going to die. And also the musical numbers.
Great. Okay. Third one.
Another fantasy. Okay. So we did... In sci-fi, we did superhero stuff. What's a good one? Oh, let me think about something for my daughters. They love Teen Titans Go. That's superhero-y. Like Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be that kind of... Ugh.
Okay, this is good. This leads me to my next category. Three rides in Disneyland that in some way become a real world.
Haunted Mansion.
Great.
Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, I wish there was a third one. Well, I'm really looking forward to the new Star Wars world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to get to walk through the Millennium Falcon,
that's
Janet.
That's exciting.
Oh, boy. Wouldn't you just, like, I would just pretend to be like, oh, I'm Garak. Yeah. I'm the Millennium Falcon mechanic.
Yeah.
No, I don't leave. I just hang out here. I just hang out here.
Do I get paid? Oh, no. Heavens no.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're going to, actor-wise, they're going to hire people to just be like, you're a Star Wars person. You hang out and
I'm
be so Star Wars.
I'm so glad they're doing that, because anything immersive like that is more fun than just a single ride where, like, you just get in and get out. And they were really onto something when they, I mean, Star Wars was one of the first rides where you were like, oh, they've created a whole world for me to just wait in line it.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
Thank you, you know.
All that
so
stuff.
So they know what they're doing.
Can I, let's see, now having said all that, can I jump over to Universal and say the Harry Potter world? Could that be one of those?
I'll allow it.
Have you been over there?
I haven't been over there because I keep feeling like I should save it and go to the big one in Orlando.
Yeah, but...
Because I've never been to Disney World and Orlando. I mean, I've never been to any of those
go
theme parks.
But you could also go here because you know so many people who work there.
That's true.
And
see Annie.
It's interesting. It's small, but it's very fulfilling because it is like most of it is sort of like what you're describing with that Star Wars waiting in line. Most of it is just atmospheric.
Okay.
But you go to that wand shop.
You've convinced me. It's
the best.
All right. All right. This is good. This is good. Okay. How about three musicals that you get to be in? Whatever character you want. You can gender bend, age bend, whatever you want.
Oh, I definitely want to be in the music. The music, when we were talking about, I think that might have been before we started recording, but The Music Man is by far my favorite one. I remember Christmas, it must have been college. This was sort of pre-DVDs and all this stuff. My brother on Christmas Eve stayed up till like 2 a.m. because Music Man was going to be on TV and he knew I loved it. So he recorded it. And so for Christmas morning, gave me on VHS.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, the best.
That's great.
That
would
show.
You be Harold Hill?
I would want to, but again, could I? Would I be the mayor?
But,
certainly.
But listen, this is
I can't be Tommy
Gilles. This is your mash right now. So I'm.
Oh yeah, I would.
I'm
oh, who does not? Does anyone not want to be Harold Hill?
I know. I would love to be
Harold
Hill. I know.
And I like Mary and the Librarian a lot too.
Yeah.
But like, you get to be, and also
I know, he has all the best numbers. Let's
he has
honest.
All the best numbers, and also I'm a great chorus member, but I'm not a super great singer. Mm-hmm. So Music Man. For all
yeah,
those
you can sort of chant your way through it.
You just tie your bike. Ding, yeah. ding, 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 pick a little, tuck a little, cheep, cheep, cheep. I mean, oh the
great.
Best.
It's great. Okay, great.
So Music Man is a great one. I have the sad distinction. I have played two of the four non-singing adult characters in West Side Story.
Uh-huh.
One of the greatest musicals of all time.
Wonderful.
But you know who doesn't get to sing? Glad Hand, Lieutenant Schrank, Krupke, and Doc.
Okay.
I've played two of those four characters.
Which two did you play? You played
I was Doc in high school. Again, maybe the youngest person in the cast in all the high school style old age
Don't
makeup.
Mind if I do.
So, like that weird white clay in my hair.
Sure.
And then looking at through the school library something about makeup. Like, so I'm sure I'm looking at like a picture of Lon Chaney as Phantom of the Opera and drawing all these deep brown lines on my face.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. I'm like 15 years old, Madison, Wisconsin, trying to affect a New York Jewish accent. I mean, ugh, boy. I don't know what I was doing.
Would you be in West Side Story as one of the
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But don't you want to be, I want to be like Riff.
Yeah. Let's get you into Riff roll.
Or Anita. That's a great part. Come on.
Oh, Anita is great too.
And then so the third musical... Gosh, what's a good musical? I've named two. There are no other good musicals. I really liked I was in Into the Woods. I really liked that show. I would like to be in Into the Woods.
Great. Is there a character specifically?
I was the narrator, and I like that. But I think those princes are super fun. Or the baker. No, baker. Don't you want to be the baker and the baker? The best part is baker's wife. But be the baker. That'd be fun.
Okay, great. This is the category I have to bring into every MASH game because it's my personal obsession. Three foods that in this MASH universe are not, they're no longer bad for you on any level. It's like they're nutritious, that you need them.
Mm-hmm.
Snap of your fingers, you've got it. It could be as specific as a cupcake from this one place in New York or just like pizza.
I like stuffed pizza. From like Chicago, like is it Giordano's or something like that? I like a nice stuffed pizza. You can't eat it a lot, but in this fantasy world, oh boy, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
What else do I really like? I really like a nice cheeseburger.
Great.
And then what would be a tasty treat? Oh, like a peanut butter fudge.
Ooh, God, fudge.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'd have a heart attack. My heart would explode. It would be racing so much from the sugar high if I could eat all the fudge I wanted.
But again, we're in the fantasy world where it's
wonderful.
Just, it's more about the
I
taste.
I would totally do fudge.
Oh, yeah. But God, I like the peanut butter because I like the salty kind of the way it cuts the chocolate. Oh.
Yeah. No, that's a delicious, very brilliant choice.
Thank you.
Okay, next is, now listen, all due respect to your wonderful wife.
Absolutely.
This is a MASH game.
That's true.
Alternate universe could just be like, listen, I'd like to spend one night with this lady.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is my alternate universe wife, companion, whatever.
Right.
Or some iteration between the two, three. And it can be, you can jump through time. It could be like, you know, blank era Julie Andrews.
I'm thinking.
I like to, but I immediately ascribe that to you. Or, you know.
Does somebody pick Mary Poppins? I like Mary Poppins, but I think that would be weird if you picked Mary Poppins as like your hot lady friend. That'd be weird.
I mean, I'm not. I wouldn't in any way look askance at that. But
well, no. But she's not one of my three. Uh-huh. That's just sort
but
of.
If someone
that
did,
was the
would
question.
Would I wonder?
That'd be, no, I wouldn't wonder about them. I just think I think you could do better. Who would I pick? I pick, I like Allison Janney on The West Wing. Oh,
great.
Like,
great,
just
great.
Funny and smart and vulnerable.
Great.
Love her. Who's on my, Maya Rudolph, because she's on the Maya and Marty right now. I just like, she's one of my, I mean, there's so many comedic actresses like that, but like right now I'm just like, oh, she's the best. I love her. I'm trying to go like, if we do like go into like genre and stuff like that, like my brain goes more towards Wonder Woman than like a Princess Leia. And it's because like I like Princess Leia, but like I feel like Wonder Woman's a little bit more of a warrior, a little more of a badass. I'm just trying to think, like, it's such a cliche. I'm trying to think, is there anybody else? Carol Burnett. I really like her.
I mean, I feel like you've taken care of the funny ladies. Yeah. If you want to go Wonder Woman, I think this is your match game.
Yeah, but the thing about Wonder Woman is, like, that's sort of what appeared, but that's not the one that really grabs me. Maybe like Raven. Do you know Teen Titans at all? Oh, my God.
People love Teen Titans.
People are very into Teen Titans. It's sort of like kind of what X-Men has been for people.
Yeah.
Okay,
then I got to get into it because I'm always looking for a new X-Men feeling.
Oh, yeah. Oh, new Teen Titans.
Okay.
Oh, like 80s era Teen Titans. Jeez, it's the best. It's the best.
Okay.
There's a funny character. He's Beast Boy now. He was Changeling. He falls in love with character Terra, who has earth powers. Turns out Terra is maybe not exactly who she says she is, and it's amazing because it's the funny guy getting his heart destroyed. It's great.
It sounds like my cup of tea.
I think you would dig that. Maybe Raven.
Okay, great.
Because she's kind of like the dark witch, but you know, she comes from sort of evil, but you know there's some good inside her.
Those are my favorite characters.
Cool.
Okay, next one is let's do time travel. Let's do, you can look on any time and place. You're safe. Nothing bad's going to happen to you. You're observing. You're not changing. But just to get a little taste to see. You can go forward, backward.
Like I'm wearing my time belt, Janet.
Like you're wearing your time belt.
That's
helmet.
Right. My tinfoil time belt. Where would I go? I definitely want to do... okay. This is a fantasy I just think is the best. I want to go to like Sherlock Holmes.
Ooh.
But I want him to be played by like on Fantasy Island. There's an episode of Fantasy Island where the guy who played Tarzan on TV, Ron Ely, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's Sherlock Holmes. So it's this 6'4", super tan blonde, like California bodybuilder looking guy wearing the deerstalker cap.
Yeah.
That's what I love about Fantasy Island is people like, oh, yes, sure, Cheryl Teagues. Of course you're Madame Curie. So I want to go to like Sherlock Holmes, Victorian England, but have it be all populated with like 70s and 80s celebrities.
That's an amazing thing to imagine. Okay.
God. If I could make a TV show, I would redo Fantasy Island now and just step on the gas.
Camp it up.
But just have fun with it.
Yeah.
It's like, the cast of Full House, you guys, we're going to redo Sound of Music. And you guys are going to do it.
Amazing.
Where else do I want to time travel to? I want to time travel to... Definitely want to go to the future. I want to think, what kind of future do I want to see? I want to see like... I guess I do want to see sort of like the Apple Store, Jetpack, Jetsons. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I want to see. I want to see like, oh, yeah. I want to see everybody has a jetpack built into their belt and your robot is your best friend. And oh, no, we don't go to Earth anymore. Oh, no. That's just a factory now.
Great.
I want to see that.
Great.
And then what other time travel? Where do you want to time travel to?
Well, I like all your choices because they still have some fantasy attached to them. It's not like I want to go, you want to see the Declaration of Independence signed. Do you know what I mean?
I just think if you go so deep into the past, everything's going to smell like shit.
Yeah, I know. It's really stinky times.
Yeah, so to me, it's always like, oh, it's like Star Trek. I'm like, oh, no, I want to go see the Nazis, but they're actually monsters wearing Nazi costumes.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, I feel like I would go even just like, it feels almost like a waste, but even just 10 to 20 years in the future, just like, yes, everyone's cars drives themselves. Like to see the young kids being like, can you believe people used to drive their own cars not that long ago? Like my mom drove her own car.
Can you believe it? We all used to have hearts with blood.
Yeah.
Ugh. Thank God my nanobites are just keeping me alive forever. Yeah, see,
you're jettisoning way further. You're going way further.
Janet.
Like I said, it could be a total waste.
Tomorrow's around the corner. Where else do we want to go? I like what you sort of said about like nearby. So maybe nearby past. Like, mm-hmm. I love, like I said, sort of like Fantastic Four in the 60s. Like maybe like New York in like the 50s mm-hmm. or the 60s. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I really want to be like a beat poet, but yeah. I do like those.
Go check it out.
Those blue suits.
Get it on you a little bit. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree. I feel that way about, I've said this before, but I feel that way about San Francisco, like same kind of time frame, maybe even the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Just this idea of like, what people were wearing and the fact that you would walk down a city street and everyone would have a hat on is just great.
Oh, I feel to use the Oscars as an example, like you can never go wrong trying to look like a movie star from the 50s.
Yeah.
Like as a guy, like a nice tuxedo and a bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do a Daniel Day-Lewis velvety,
right, ruffle,
dangly thing. Yeah. I mean, because it's dated as soon as you put it on.
Yeah.
Or like those, like the Russell Crowe had sort of like those two pieces of fabric kind of folded. Like, it just, it's nothing against them. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
But like you could always go Cary Grant.
Mm-hmm.
You could always go like a dinner tuxedo. Paul's probably a better person.
They call this timeless.
Yeah, but yeah.
They call this timeless. Great. Okay, final category. Let's do alternate universe careers.
Oh, gosh. For me?
Mm-hmm.
No, somebody else. I really, through improv, I've done a lot of teaching. I would really like to teach. I love working with kids. And I feel like...
Yeah, you're a great teacher.
Well, thank you. But especially with... improv, like it makes you a better improviser because mm-hmm. then as soon as you start teaching it, all of a sudden then you hear your voice when you're on stage reminding your students, set the where, dum-dum.
Yeah.
Like, hey, are you listening right now or are you thinking? Like all that stuff.
Absolutely.
I love teaching. I would want to be, I think it might be fun to be like a lawyer, but like a courtroom lawyer, like you mm-hmm. know, with
your
sleeves rolled up.
Oh,
and
my God, I'm right there with you. I want fictitious.
Yeah,
like Your Honor, may I approach?
Oh yeah, maybe like Southern lawyer.
Oh yeah,
but like fun, like it's hot a little bit in the courtroom.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as you step outside, those giant fans over,
that's right.
You don't want to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, it's great.
And too much
but
linen.
I can't
wear linen. Yeah, Southern lawyer. But fun, like a fun Southern lawyer.
Not a racist Southern lawyer.
Oh God,
let's
no.
Be very clear.
And
you're defending against.
And maybe my one big case has to do with race,
mm-hmm.
but like,
you got more of the Atticus Finch. Going.
Oh,
yeah,
perfect.
To be on the right side of history in that way, so ensmuggening. Not a word.
Don't we all want to be on the right side?
Yeah.
And then third career, I like cooking.
Great.
I think it'd be a fun cook. Jeff fun Dahlman. Cook. No, nobody wants a fun cook. You want a good cook. You don't want a fun cook.
If he also happens to be
these
fun.
Gummy worms will make that beef delicious. Fuck you, fun cook.
You're right. You're right. I feel changed. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. I'm going to pause this. I'm going to reassure the listener it will seem as if no time whatsoever has passed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to come back with your 100% guaranteed fictitious mass future.
Love it.
You don't have to be nervous.
I'm a little nervous.
But I do like that you're nervous. You know what? Stay nervous.
All right.
Okay. First of all...
Boy, that took forever. I hope the listener did not tune out because...
I don't think you understand.
All right.
First of all, I got to rip the Band-Aid off. You did get a shack.
Wait, say that again?
Mansion, apartment, shack, house. You got the shack.
Oh,
but the shack is inside of this sort of Disneyland world. And so that could be an adorable enchanted shack.
It
turns into a castle.
I love how you're trying to spin this.
I did.
A shack is a shack is a shack.
Okay. You got a shack in Disneyland.
I'm wearing a barrel.
I don't... And there aren't even suspenders. It's just two pieces of rope.
I'm covered in honey and bees. I'm like Winnie the Pooh.
As long as we're on the Disneyland track, I can reassure you that you can jump into this sort of Pirates of the Caribbean world whenever you want to.
That's fun.
I don't know what's going on in there. You might have a beautiful castle in there. I'm really trying to take the sting out of this shack thing.
There are not a lot of castles on the ocean, so I'm drowning in my shack. All right. So wait, I'm a shack pirate? I'm just like, I'm that one...
I'm not saying that you... Those two things don't have to be connected.
I would like to say, when I listen to this show, all of the mashes, it's a very fantasy, like, oh, you need... So far, I'm living on a fucking rock in the middle of an ocean.
You did that to yourself.
In a shack.
You did that to yourself.
How did I do that?
You know what? Why don't you go ahead and just try to argue your way out of it?
I'm not arguing. I'm raising
as the Southern courtroom lawyer that you are. Your Honor, I will be defending myself in this case.
I would like to address the crab, Your Honor. You know, this coral reef I seem to find myself living on. Oh, I'll get to you, Mr. Walrus, in just a moment. Oh, my God.
Oh, so satisfying. I don't know if you're going to need to use those skills to defend someone in Victorian era England, but you might have to bring, you might have to have the Hoff. You might have to be defending him.
Oh!
You know, because he, a.k.a. Sigmund Freud, I don't really know.
I love it.
Happen.
No, this is...
So you definitely have your other dream world of your 70s and 80s celebs also
existing. He really got himself the shittiest lawyer possible.
That's amazing. I want to congratulate you on your great work in West Side Story.
Thank you.
My understanding is you did two productions, and one you played Anita, and the other you played Riff.
I don't think I would
Wonderful.
By the way, me and drag, not
attractive. Not a good idea.
Not
you're a man.
But that you know, that doesn't mean anything. But some of the kids in the hall.
No, you're right. I understand.
Very attractive as women. Huh? I look like a serial killer. It's not cute.
No. They're a tuba. We all saw it coming. Now, listen, I want to thank you for helming the marvelous Doctor Strange movie that you created, and is it a smash success? You might be able to buy yourself a new house, by the way. I don't know why you insist on living in a shack. You're very humble.
I've been put there in the middle of the pirate world.
Where somehow, some way... You have a nonstop supply of peanut butter fudge.
Oh.
Your sustenance.
I think that's why.
Amazing. Amazing.
That must be why people come to me to defend them, because they know I got a main line to
the
peanut butter fudge.
They come for the defense and stay for the fudge, or vice versa. And you're sharing all of this marvelous shit with Raven from Teen Titans.
Oh. She will leave me, by the way. That is a doomed romance. From the very beginning, because there is no way she's going to hang out with some dipshit in suspenders. Your Honor, I contend that this old-timey box that says TNT from that piratey ship over yonder, Raven, where have you gone, my lady? Wow.
Well, you really found the bittersweet in this mash game.
I have to say, I think that is the worst mash I've heard. Now, again, I want to be clear. This is not you. This is my world. I feel like my world really, I need
to
do some
work. Well,
you
made it the funniest.
Thank you.
I've not laughed this hard during a mash game. I don't know if ever.
Good.
Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
I am delighted.
I'll tell you what. There is one more thing I require of you. You may not leave delighted.
Uh-oh.
I do ask you to sing however much or however little
of
Don Henley's Boys of Summer.
Oh, sure.
That you can think of. I want to remind everyone they can find Chris Tallman on Twitter.
And Instagram.
And Instagram.
It's Mr. M.R. Chris Tallman. Mr. Chris Tallman.
M.R. Mr. Chris Tallman. Anything else people need to know?
The Thundermans continues to roll strong. I think right now when we're recording this, we're on Saturday nights at 8 o'clock. Who knows?
Great.
Hopefully, I think there's more Spontanean Nation stuff coming up in the future. Are you guys doing more Thrilling Adventure Hour? There's like little bits here and there,
little bits here and there. Hopefully. I think it's kind of a question mark about what it'll be.
It's on a hiatus.
Yeah.
That's kind of it for the moment. I'm working on a podcast for Howl. We'll see.
Yeah.
We've recorded 3 episodes and it took a year. So.
Well, I understand.
Yes.
I understand. Once you get rolling.
Thanks. All right. Okay. So what am I singing on Boys in Summer?
Yeah. Whatever you can think of. Whatever
out
you
on
want.
The road today, I saw a deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. A voice inside my head said, I got the rhythm wrong. The voice inside my head said, don't look back. You can never look back, but you look back. I thought I knew. That's my favorite part in the video.
Right. Yeah.
Because they cut to the person looking back. Thought I knew what love was. What did I know? Those days are gone forever. I like to make it a country song.
I should just let them go, but I can see your brown skin shining
in the sun. You got your hair pulled back in them Wayfarers on, baby. Don't. I can't tell you my love for you will still be strong after the boys of summer have gone.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.